Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear how proposed budget cuts may affect the Minnesota National Guard's ability to respond to disasters, and we'll learn about the State Soldiers Assistance Program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Tuesday, April 15th at 9 in the morning, military families and supporters are gathering in the St. Paul Capitol Rotunda, and they're wearing purple. It's the fourth annual National Purple Up Day designed by Operation Military Kids to call attention to the special challenges of military children. Nationwide, more than 2 million children have a parent serving in either an active duty or reserve role for our armed forces. In Minnesota, 20,000 men and women are currently serving. Their children bravely face the uncertainty of their parents' safety when they are away, as well as the difficult reintegration process when they return. It is important for these military-connected youth to know that their nation and community stand by them and support them. I invite you to join us in the St. Paul Capitol Rotunda on April 15th at 9 in the morning as we attempt to stage the state's largest Purple Up photo. There will also be a program recognizing the children and families of our Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen currently deployed.
Thank you, General Ash. So let's all purple up on April 15th at 0900 at the St. Paul Capitol Rotunda to support our Minnesota military children. Joining us now from the Minnesota National Guard is Colonel John Jensen, who is the commander of the 1st Brigade Combat Team. Colonel Jensen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
Sir, can you give us a little background? How many years have you been in the military?
Sure. This November will be my 32nd anniversary of being in the National Guard.
And always with the Minnesota National Guard, sir? No.
No, no. 1982, right out of high school, my freshman year in college, I joined the Iowa Army National Guard in an infantry battalion, Southwest Iowa, as a combat medic. Served about 6.5 years as an enlisted soldier and then NCO. And then went to OCS down at Fort Benning, Georgia, and was commissioned as an infantry officer in 1989. So I served in the Iowa Guard till right around 2000. 2000, I deployed to Kuwait, went to an Army school, came back out of there, and found myself at the Rosemont Armory as part of the 34th Infantry Division headquarters as the Chief of Plans.
So we've converted you to a Minnesotan now, sir.
Absolutely, yes. My relatives back home certainly... we'll say that my kids speak like a Minnesotan.
Colonel, a couple of years ago, Sergeant Ben and I had the opportunity to go visit with the 1st Brigade Combat Team when they were stationed over in Kuwait. And now you're the commander of that legendary force, part of the Red Bulls.
Yes, absolutely legendary. I was fortunate enough to follow Colonel Eric Kurska, who was the commander during that time. He and I did a change of command ceremony in July of 2012, and it's been a privilege and an honor to command that organization. But especially after Eric Kurska was there, him and his whole command team did a great job.
Sir, for our listeners that don't know, the 1st Brigade Combat Team, how many soldiers and what kind of capabilities?
Yeah, it's a mechanized brigade combat team. So think Bradleys and tanks. Our artillery are mechanized as well. All total, it's about 5,000 soldiers that are currently assigned to that brigade. So it's one of the largest brigades, not just in the National Guard, but in the entire United States Army. So it's, like I said, it's a challenge, but it's also a great privilege to be a part of that organization.
Now, Colonel, since you became commander of the 1st Brigade Combat Team, has there been a reset? Have there been some changes in equipment and personnel?
Yeah, absolutely. What traditionally happens is after a unit comes back from the deployment, we'll go into what's called a reset year. And during that reset year, the Army likes to... reorganize you and re-equip you. And so right now we're going through that process. We'll be done with that process equipment-wise this August. And the primary equipment change that we made is that we've added a more capable Bradley fighting vehicle. Our new Bradley system is the Bradley, what we call ODS, SA or Operation Desert Storm Situation Awareness platform. And so it's a big upgrade from the platform we were previously in. And so that will conclude in August of 2014. And then following that, we'll do an organizational change where we'll just slightly change some of our battalion structure, but we'll still maintain that full go-to-war capability that the 1st Brigades had for since its history as the 1st Minnesota.
So, sir, it was my understanding that the brigade, when they went to Kuwait, they fell in on some equipment, but they brought some of their equipment with them.
Yes.
The equipment they brought back, was it in pretty good shape, or that's what you upgraded?
Yeah, the Army will spend up to a year to make sure that equipment is fully capable before it comes back into your unit. And so some of that equipment only takes 30 days. Some of the equipment, you know, the more complex equipment for, like, for example, our vehicles, takes about a half a year to get back. And so, yeah, everything is back now, ready to go. We're fully equipped. All we did was exchange an old platform for a new platform.
And, Colonel, with you know, we're done in Iraq and we're not over in Kuwait anymore, and we're supposed to be out of Afghanistan by the end of this year, and we'll see how that works. What does that mean for the brigade and for future missions?
Yeah, for the 1st Brigade Combat Team, what's kind of interesting right now is as we look into the near future, we don't see ourselves on a deployment plan right now. But what's important to understand is you know, we're not standing pat. You know, this organization sent part of its force to Bosnia in 2003, Kosovo in 2004, Iraq 2005 to 2007, and then Kuwait, as you mentioned, from 2011 to 2012. And so for the first time, really, since 2003, we've been able to kind of pause here and collect ourselves. But, you know, we continue to train for our go-to-war mission, that most complex mission. So we got a couple things coming up here in the near term, in addition to the equipment that we talked about. Next year, we have what's called the Brigade Command Post Exercise, which will take place, which really will validate our brigade and battalion headquarters to do command and control type of activity. We'll have a brigade exportable combat training center experience. So if our listeners are familiar with the National Training Center in California or the Joint Readiness Training Center down in Louisiana, we try to replicate that very complex training event and environment at Camp Ripley. And then that will all lead us to the National Training Center in August of 2016, which is really the Super Bowl of pre-deployment training.
We're speaking with Colonel John Jensen, Minnesota National Commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, the Minnesota National Guard has a federal and a state mission. How does the brigade react, and what's the mission for the state, as you see, to support local communities coming up?
Yeah, first and foremost, what we have to be is, you know, we have to be as capable as we can, in terms of our manning, our equipping, and then our training. And what that allows us to do is really to respond to any type of complex crisis. So we maintain our readiness and our training capability, and that allows us to be employed here in the state in response to any emergency whatsoever.
So, Colonel, I've heard on the news that it sounds like the annual flooding isn't going to be as serious as it usually is, but I'm sure you're standing by and you're trained up for that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we don't believe the forecast because last year, you know, they were forecasting flooding and none came. So this year we really thought they were forecasting no flooding, so we're convinced that it's going to come. But what we've done is we've ensured that our unit out there in the Red River Valley has conducted their tabletop exercises with the local emergency managers and their partners out there to make sure if something does happen, we're as prepared as we can be with our local partners out there.
Colonel, I understand that you might be moving into a new job as director of the Joint Staff. What capabilities does the entire Guard bring to our communities when it comes to things like floods and disasters?
Yeah, we look at what we call the essential 10. You know, do we have an aviation capability, a command and control capability, a chemical reaction capability, engineering capability, medical, communications, transportation, security, logistics, all of those? We call that the essential 10. Minnesota, in part because it has a large National Guard, you know, over 13,000 soldiers and airmen. You know, we have some type of unit that's in all of those 10 areas. And so we're a very capable force to respond to any type of emergency that have historically taken place here in Minnesota.
And, sir, it's my understanding that you're constantly in contact with the local communities, the Sheriff's Department, the Homeland Security, everyone else, so that when a disaster does happen, your Rolodex is good. You know who to call.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that was one of the big lessons out of that took place, you know, post 9/11, post Hurricane Katrina was that you really have to prepare for an emergency. You just can't respond to it. And so we have put forth a great amount of effort and time and energy into those preparedness exercises. When we have a big one coming up a little over a year and a half from now called Vigilant Guard 15, which will really help us tighten those relationships.
And Colonel, I understand that you have a unique relationship with the Northern Minnesota region of the Red Cross.
Yes, I do. I've been fortunate that since 2012, I've had the pleasure to serve as the Northern Minnesota region military liaison, so I get to sit on their board. And it's just a great partnership because the Red Cross is much like the National Guard in the sense that they have a preparedness aspect to them as well as a response aspect to them. And, you know, we typically think of the Red Cross as responding, but they have a tremendous preparedness mission as well. So it's a great fit. I represent not only the Minnesota National Guard, but all the service members and all the services here in Minnesota with the Red Cross. So it's been a great partnership. I've really enjoyed that. I've met some great citizens here of Minnesota that are involved in their communities.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk more about the Minnesota National Guard and their relationship with the Northern Minnesota region of the Red Cross. We're speaking with Colonel John Jensen, the commander of Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been joined today by Colonel John Jensen, the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, we've been talking about the 1st Brigade Combat Team and being ready for the federal mission and the state mission, and then we just started talking a little bit about your relationship with the Red Cross.
Yeah.
A pretty important one to be prepared once again.
Absolutely, yeah. They do a great job with the citizens across the United States of being prepared for that next bad event.
And you brought a special guest with
you. I did. Yeah, I brought with me the Chief Executive Officer for the American Red Cross Northern Minnesota Region, Mr. Phil Hansen, who recruited me onto the board based off of a nomination of one of your friends, Brigadier General retired Joe Kelly. And so for the last couple of years, I've been working with Phil in the Red Cross, and it's been a pleasure. So, Phil, welcome.
Welcome to the show, Phil. Can you tell us a little bit how long you've been with the Red Cross?
Yeah, I've been with the Red Cross now for just over 30 years. I've worked in different posts all across the country, but I'm part of one of two regions here in Minnesota, the Northern Minnesota region, headquartered here out of the Twin Cities, and we cover points north and over to the Dakotas. And so I've been now to about 210 major disasters across the country during my tenure with the Red Cross.
Oh, my goodness. Phil, I've grown up listening to the Red Cross is always there when there's a disaster. Can you just give us, our listeners, just a little background? When there is a disaster, what part do you play?
Yeah, the Red Cross is there to respond to disasters when they occur across the country. And we have across the country each year about 70,000 total disaster responses that we make. Just in northern Minnesota, it's about 500 events every year we're responding to. And it's everything from your individual family house fire on up to the terrible mudslide that happened just recently down in Washington State. So the Red Cross across the country is there to provide food, clothing, shelter, medications, take care of the immediate emergency needs that people have after these tragic events occur, and it's all really done by a tremendous group of volunteers that make that happen every day.
I'd hate to be the person on that phone 24/7, Phil.
Yep, it's something that we have to be prepared for all the time, and we have, again, a great team that gets out there and gets it done. Almost 900 volunteers just in our region alone that respond to disasters every day.
So you must work very closely with the Minnesota National Guard with all these disasters.
We do. We often work with many terrific partners. The Guard is an awesome partner for the Red Cross. We work together to respond to these events, and we coordinate, do exercises together to get prepared, but we also then, in times of disaster, respond as a team and serving the needs of the people that have been affected and hurt by these events.
Now, some of that training so that each side understands what the Guard is going to do, what the Red Cross is going to do, what the local communities are going to do.
Absolutely. We have to make sure, and it's really important. We have kind of a saying in the organization that you don't want to exchange business cards when in the middle of a disaster, right? So we want to make sure that in advance we do training and exercises together. As a team, we work in places together like Camp Ripley to prepare ourselves. We actually train the number of our folks up there. We oftentimes do coordinated exercises with the Guard as well to make sure that we're prepared as a team to put together the best possible, quickest, and most effective response when tragic events happen in our state.
Phil, northern Minnesota is a pretty big territory. You must have some supplies strategically stored around the state.
We do. We actually have 6 offices across the state, so we have supplies in places like Duluth and Bemidji and Alexandria, St. Cloud, making sure that we have equipment and personnel, you know, close by when things happen. So we're always ready when a disaster happens, and we have people close by, equipment and supplies close by. And actually, we even have predetermined shelter sites across the state that are ready to go in the event of a major disaster.
We're speaking with Colonel John Jensen from the Minnesota National Guard and Phil Hansen from the Red Cross on Minnesota Military Radio. Phil, you mentioned Camp Ripley. We're fortunate in this state to have one of the best training facilities in the country. Red Cross does some training up there as well?
We do. Actually, we train our we have an exercise that we do each year up there with our team members, but we actually train our disaster leadership team there, and we have an annual conference that we hold at Ripley each year to help train our volunteers and get them prepared for emergencies. And of course, Tom, you know the Red Cross has worked for years very closely with the military. When you look at our services, our 5 lines of service are the disaster services, our service, international services, our blood services, our health and safety programs, and then, of course, our service to the military, which actually dates all the way back to Clara Barton.
It goes it's even further back than I'm old, Colonel.
It's pretty fascinating. Actually, you know, she was the first really Red Cross person on the ground during the Civil War that provided for the needs of wounded soldiers during that time. And she also helped to kind of write messages home to the service members. And over time, it was realized that the military really needed an intermediary, an independent or neutral source between the military families and personnel when they're deployed around the world. So if there's an emergency back home, let's say you're here, your wife's here, your son is serving in the military in Afghanistan, and your wife becomes ill, and you want your son to come home, the only way that you can really do that is by calling the Red Cross. We can actually talk to your wife's physician and get a doctor's interpretive statement, a diagnosis, prognosis, current condition, and a recommendation as to whether or not the service member's presence is warranted. Everywhere in the world where the military is deployed, in places like Afghanistan, there are Red Cross personnel stationed with them. Red Cross on the ground receives the message, tracks down command. Command decides that they'll release, and we help to get the service member home, oftentimes providing financial assistance in conjunction with the military aid societies to get that done. We handle about 2,000 cases a year right here in the metro like that, over 400,000 across the country. And we're there when there's been a medical emergency, a death in the family, maybe a baby's been born. We give these kinds of messages to help, again, bring this kind of emergency messaging to our military members across the world.
And I got to tell you, Tom, it's amazing to be deployed somewhere. You know, during my 4 deployments, there was always a Red Cross office, always Red Cross personnel there. And so, you know, when Phil came and asked me to be a part of this, it was very difficult to say no to an organization that was deployed forward in theater with me. So, I mean, I immediately said yes.
You didn't have much choice, sir.
No, I didn't. No, he runs a pretty tight ship and a hard bargain.
You know, it's nice to hear that the Red Cross is still performing those duties because when I was in Vietnam, we didn't have today's technology. The only way we could get emergency messages from our family was they contacted the Red Cross, and about 2 weeks later, we'd find out what was going on back home. But here you are still doing it.
Yeah, and it's a great help to command in the field, because if it's been an emergency back home, having that neutral party to really say that it's truly the kind of emergency that a soldier needs to come home for, it helps to be able to have the independent verifying source that the Red Cross provides in order to do that. And sometimes, even though we have the cell phones and we have all that technology, it's when you're on a mission, it's very difficult to reach a soldier. So we can actually get that done through the Red Cross and get them home pretty quickly when bad things happen back home.
Phil and his organization also has been there for our families as we've done our pre-deployment training with our families, our post-deployment training as well. So, you know, they've been full partners of ours during the entire process for the service member and for the service member's family. So, you know, they add great value to our organization.
That's a great point, John, that Colonel Jensen, that we actually do serve that way. We have team members that are actually, most of them, retired military themselves, that do pre-deployment briefings with every military member before they're deployed, making sure they understand how to access our services. And then we make sure their families know how to access our services as well in times of crisis when they got to get that message through.
Well, you've convinced me the Red Cross is still a vibrant resource for the people in Minnesota. And Colonel Jensen, every month somebody comes on and tells me something else is going on up at Camp Ripley. That's quite a facility.
You know, it is. It's, you know, we're very proud of it. And we really believe that it's a facility that is world class. And that if the Army ever really stumbled upon Camp Ripley, they would want to use it a lot more. So we do try to keep it a little bit of a secret here in at least to Minnesota. But it's a great jewel. You know, Phil talked about, you know, what we call a non-governmental organization training there. But, you know, the state of Minnesota, HSCM, Homeland Security Emergency Management, has a facility up there, DNR, you know, just all these other state entities that are up there training every day of the week.
It's a good thing it's a state asset, because then a big army can't take it away.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Phil, how can our listeners help the Red Cross?
Well, that's a great question. In addition to our services that we provide for emergency communication, and again, you can get to us through 1-800-RED-CROSS. That's the number to reach the Red Cross at. We also are looking for volunteers. We have programs that we provide in the VA hospitals, and we're looking for more volunteers to serve. If you'd like to continue your mission as a service member that's returned, or as a retired service member, or even as a family of a service member, come volunteer with the Red Cross. We put you to work helping us in the VA hospitals. We're looking for disaster volunteers that can join our team to respond to disasters. We're always looking for blood donors. We always need more people to come out and give blood. And we always are encouraging families to get yourself and your family prepared for emergencies before they happen. We have some great materials on how to make a plan, how to build a kit, how to get trained, and how to make sure that you're ready when storm season comes here to Minnesota this year. You're prepared and ready for emergencies, and make sure your family's set to go before bad things happen. So, again, volunteering, giving blood, and helping to support our disaster relief efforts are tremendous ways to support the work of the Red Cross.
And for our listeners, we'll have a link to the Red Cross website on the Minnesota Military Radio Facebook site. Colonel, we've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, Tom, it's been a pleasure to be here today. I know you've had this program going on for over 3 years now. It's taken you this long to invite me, but no, seriously. It's great being here. And Phil, thanks so much for coming and telling a little bit about the Red Cross and the great partnership that we have here. It's great to be a part of that partnership.
Colonel, my apologies, and you're welcome to come back anytime. And Phil, thanks for stopping by to talk to us today about the Red Cross.
Pleasure to be with both of you. Thank you.
That was Colonel John Jensen from the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team and Phil Hansen from the Red Cross on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll come back and learn about the State Soldiers Assistance Program in just a moment.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll learn about the State Soldiers Assistance Program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
During the month of April, the state of Minnesota takes time to recognize the Month of the Military Child in order to emphasize the important role military children play while a parent or an important adult is serving. The children of service members sacrifice a great deal when their parent is deployed, and they are rarely recognized for that sacrifice. Children of service members deal with many issues unique to their situation. Some move frequently, others worried about the loved one in harm's way, or just feel the stress of being separated from a parent for an extended period of time. All of these issues can make normal childhood activities more difficult. During this month, Governor Mark Dayton will send military children a letter of gratitude in honor of their service and sacrifice. To register a military child to receive a letter from the governor, contact MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. Once again, to get that letter, contact MinnesotaVeteran.org. And let's all purple up on April 15th at 0900 at the St. Paul Capitol Rotunda to support our Minnesota military children. The State Soldiers Assistance Program provides numerous benefits for veterans and their dependents. There are varying income and asset qualifications based on the type of benefit the veteran is seeking. If a veteran chooses to use their once-per-lifetime special needs grant, the veteran must show due diligence and future sustainability. Benefits include grants for housing, dental, optical, education, subsistence, disaster relief, and special needs. Joining us now to talk about the State Soldiers Assistance Program is Andy Jarvis, Benefits Division Supervisor from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Andy, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Andy, I understand you've been in the United States Army Reserves, and you still are?
Correct.
How long have you served?
It'll be 12 years this August.
And what do you do in the reserves?
Well, currently, actually, I'm transitioning to a new position as an emergency preparedness liaison officer for the state of Minnesota. So I'll be working with a team of EPLOs, they're called, the emergency preparedness liaison officers. They work for different branches. We have an Army one, an Air Force, Navy, so on and so forth. So our mission there is to help the National Guard and other non-government organizations respond to emergencies and just be there if they ever need assistance with federal troops.
I'll bet you were interested in that piece we just did about the Red Cross in Minnesota.
It's very interesting. I'm very excited.
Andy, I understand you were deployed a couple times.
Yes, twice.
Once to Afghanistan and once to Iraq?
Yep. In the second deployment, we did Iraq, Kuwait, and Afghanistan, all three of them.
Well, that's got to be real helpful, your military background, when you go over to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and try to help all the veterans in the state.
Yeah, I think it's been a real advantage for me to be able to assist the new veterans coming back, because you can relate to them and the difficulties that they've been going through.
Andy, I've heard from a lot of veterans that ask me the questions, what's the difference between the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Fed VA? Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of differences. Mainly, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is designed to take care of the state veterans, make sure that our veterans are both achieving all the federal benefits that they can get, and then also to develop programs to assist veterans attain those federal benefits, and then assist veterans that where federal benefits are shortfalling.
So in essence, you serve as a point of entry for Minnesota veterans to access some of those federal benefits and the state benefits.
Correct.
We're speaking with Andy Jarvis, Benefits Division Supervisor from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So Andy, can you tell me, how do the state benefits differ for our veterans from the federal benefits?
Well, the state benefits, first and foremost, are only available to Minnesota residents, so that's important to note. And then secondly, they're used a lot of times to assist veterans while they're applying for those federal benefits. A lot of the federal benefits are long-term sustaining programs, your VA compensation, your pension, things of those nature. So our state programs can assist those veterans while they're trying to attain those federal benefits to keep them in a livable situation and to sustain their way of life till they can get on those long-term benefits.
So Andy, can you give us some examples of the state programs?
Yeah. We currently, the SSAP is administering 8 different programs. We have a dental program, which provides dental assistance. And that's actually 3-tiered, where we have a routine dental voucher, a denture extraction voucher, and the denture and extraction vouchers are a once-in-a-lifetime voucher.
So under what circumstances would a veteran be eligible for that?
With the dental program, it's an income and asset-based program, so they would have to meet the requirements that we have set forth. And the same with the optical program. We also have an optical program that's available annually, and that's also an income and asset-based program. So as long as they're a veteran or one of the eligible dependents of a veteran, they meet the income and asset program guidelines, and they meet the Minnesota definition, statutory definition of a veteran, then they'll be eligible for those programs.
So if we've got a veteran that's kind of down on his luck and maybe laid off for a period of time and having some problems with a bad tooth or need some new glasses, they might be eligible for the program.
Exactly. And those are just 2 of the 8 programs that we have. We also have a subsistence program, which a lot of people, you can think of that as a short-term disability program. A lot of times veterans will use that when they've become disabled and they can't work and they don't have any other means of income. And it's also used for widows where the veteran has recently passed away to help them transition in that income period where it's dropped drastically. We also have a special needs grant that's available. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for veterans that are in a financial difficult situation. And then we also have 2 education programs, a disaster relief grant, which is implemented if the governor declares a state of emergency, and then also a HUD-VASH security deposit program, which is a partnership formed through the federal HUD-VASH program.
I just want to ask you on that special needs grant, is there some limitations on it in terms of amount, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime deal.
Correct. It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. We don't have any hard and fast limits on the dollar amount. Certain things like hearing aids, we've limited those to $5,000 for a pair of hearing aids. And then a home repair, some of those things we limit. But we really try to keep it open and be as flexible for people because every situation is different. We've had people use it to, you know, avoid home foreclosures and people on a past due electric bill.
So that's like an emergency program once in a lifetime. Don't waste it because you're not going to get it again.
Exactly. We really would try to encourage people to utilize other resources that are out there if there's something that would fit them better so that they can save their once in a lifetime grant later on down the road.
Are there things within your purview that you can do to help the homeless veterans when they're trying to get reemployed and set back up in society?
Yep. So we actually have a program, the HUD-VASH Security Deposit Program. Any veteran that's been chronically homeless and is in the federal VA's VASH program, they get a voucher that subsidizes their rent. So the one downfall to that program is there's still a security deposit that's due. Well, these veterans that are chronically homeless, they have a problem coming up with a security deposit. So our department, you submit an application, and we'll cover that security deposit for the veteran to get them into housing. And then the special needs grant has also been used to get people into housing if they're not part of the VASH program or just need help with the security deposit. We've helped people transition that way too.
So then you work hand-in-hand with MACV to try to get our veterans back into society, back to work, get them a home, get them back on their feet, and get going.
Yep, MACV, we've worked with them a lot. Our agency has in the past and in the future. And a lot of times in the State Soldier Assistance Program, our Veterans Assistance Coordinators will contact a MACV representative and talk to them about maybe how MACV can come in and assist that veteran so they don't have to use their once-in-a-lifetime grant.
So we see what kind of resources MACV has available, and then you take a look at your various programs to see how you can help out as well.
Exactly.
It's got to feel good doing that work, Andy.
That's why we love going to work every day.
We have to take a short break. We'll be back with more with Andy Jarvis, Benefits Division Supervisor from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio in just a moment. Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, founder and principal partner of Phelan Partners Limited, a Twin Cities mergers and acquisitions advisory firm where we help business owners to plan, prepare, and execute a strategy to complete the deal. When I'm not hosting Minnesota Military Radio on this station, I'm hard at work helping business owners with their exit strategies. If you're interested in selling a business, please give us a call at 763-231-4200 at Phelan Partners Limited. We've been bringing buyers and sellers together since 1985 and would welcome an opportunity to help you. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking with Andy Jarvis, Benefits Division Supervisor from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about the Minnesota's State Soldiers Assistance Program. Andy, we've had County Veteran Service Officers on the show many times in the past, and I think we just had Todd Kaminsky on a week or two ago, and the first thing he always says is to all our veterans in the state, if you haven't met your local county veteran service officer, usually hangs out somewhere around the courthouse, go get your DD-214 and go visit with them. You subscribe to that theory too, don't you?
We do. In a lot of our programs, you have to go to your county veteran service officer to apply for them. They're the ones that, they're your gateway. They can screen all the programs, federal, nonprofit, state programs, and figure out which one is really going to work for you. So we tell all the veterans, you go see your CVSO, meet with them, talk to them about just how life is going and any issues you do have. And if anybody doesn't know how to get a hold of their CVSO, you can always go to macvso.org. And that provides a directory of all the county veteran service officers in the state.
And once again, that's macvso.org, and we'll have that link on our Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page in case you didn't catch it. So anything a veteran needs, go see your county veteran service officer. If they can't help you out, they'll send you to somebody that can. And if you want to access any of these programs under the Minnesota State Soldiers Assistance Program, they're your entry point. They prepare the applications. They help our veterans apply for these type of benefits.
Exactly.
So one of the things I wanted to get back to again was that once per lifetime special needs grant. We were talking off the air. You had an example of a family that had some problems. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we see this all too often. You get a family that's maybe the breadwinner in the family has gotten laid off or is currently unemployed, and they fall behind on their mortgage. Well, this family had fallen behind on their mortgage, and they were in the foreclosure process. So at this point, the mortgage and everything was at a law firm. And they applied for a special needs grant. We worked with them, talked to them. They received some financial counseling. And the veteran actually had received employment, so now he's working. There was sustainability, but there was still the foreclosure lingering over their heads. And you had a family, husband, wife, two children, and they're really facing the decision of, are we going to have to uproot our kids from school, change everything in our life, or can we get this assistance? And the amount was fairly high, high enough where we said we couldn't do this all on our own. We talked with the veteran back and forth, and he was able to come up with $3,000 towards that foreclosure. And we assisted him. He came down to our office. We got the checks put together. We FedExed him off to the law firm. We saved the house from foreclosing. And the family went on to live their normal everyday life that they were used to. And it's really happy to, when you can keep a family in their home. You can keep the children in the same school that they've been going to for years. And you don't have to uproot them and make them go through that.
You had to feel pretty good that day. You saved the family in their house, got them current on their mortgage, and he's back to work and happily ever after, I hope.
It feels great.
It's good to help veterans, and it's great to help them out of a hole like that. Andy, I wanted to back up a little bit. One of the veterans programs you were talking about, there are some state education benefits. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so the state actually provides three different veteran-related education programs. The first one is the Minnesota GI Bill. That one's appropriated through our agency, but the SSAP, the State Social Assistance Program, does not administer that. You can go online to the Office of Higher Education and apply for that program. The two that the State Social Assistance Program does administer are the Veteran Education Program and the War Survivor Education Program. And the Veteran Education Program is a once-in-a-lifetime $750 a grant to be used towards tuition for anybody that hasn't received a bachelor's degree or its equivalent yet, which is kind of hard to do nowadays with the federal GI Bill and how expansive that is and all the other veteran tuition assistance through your military branch and everything.
That one's available to veterans of any age?
That's veterans of any age. There's no limit on that. But that is a one-time $750 grant.
Okay, and then you said there was one called the War Survivors Education Benefit.
The War Survivor Education Benefit is a great program. It provides a tuition waiver to any in-state college or university. So a MinSCU school, University of Minnesota, all of those schools would qualify. And it waives the tuition for a spouse or the dependent of a veteran who's either died from their military service or from a service-connected condition. So a lot of times, you know, with the Vietnam veterans, we're having issues with Agent Orange-related diseases, heart disease, you know, all these things. If that veteran passes away from something that was service-connected for that, their children are eligible for this program. And it does provide a $750 annual stipend to be used towards books or supplies to go to school. But if they go to any one of the state colleges or universities, they'll get a tuition waiver, which is great because they can get up to a bachelor's degree and they're not going to have to pay for it.
Andy, I understand for some of us older veterans at the MinSCU and the state schools, we can go back to school under another program. Is that true? If you're over 60?
Yeah, I don't know if that what the age is, 60 or 62, but I think anybody can go to school after 60 or 62 at any state college or university, which is a great program. It's always good to keep learning and don't stop.
Well, it keeps you young, I think. And so for all of all my Vietnam veteran buddies out there, if you want to go back to college, go see your county veteran service officer. They'll tell you how to do it, and maybe it'll keep you young at heart at least. Andy, I wanted to come back and ask you about for all these programs, what is the general eligibility and how does somebody apply for benefits through the MDVA?
So the general eligibility, it changes based on the program, but the programs that are income and asset based are the dental, optical, and subsistence. And then the special needs is not income and asset based, although it's a factor that we use to establish sustainability, which is one of the main criteria of the program. The veteran education, the war survivor education, there's no income or asset basis on that. It's all based on the veteran status and the applicant status. And then disaster relief grant, there's no income or asset based on that. It's based on if you're a veteran and then if the governor has declared your county is a state of emergency, and then whether or not you have expenditures to be reimbursed upon. And then the HUD VAS security deposit program, you have to be a participant in the VAS program through the federal VA. And then obviously every program, you have to be a veteran by Minnesota state standard statutes. And then you also have to be a resident with the intent to stay. So you can prove residency by submitting a lease agreement, a Minnesota driver's license or ID, things of that nature.
So the actual process of applying for a grant goes to your county veteran service officer. What happens after that?
Yep, you would look up who your county veteran service officer is. You would go to them, apply for the grant or whichever program you'd want. And usually what they're going to do is they're going to talk to you about the program that you want. They're going to send you home to gather some of the supporting documentation that we may need, like bank statements and copies of the bills that you're looking to have considered. You'll come back in. They'll put everything together, send it off to us. It's received in our department. We log it into our system, and one of our Veterans Assistance Coordinators will process that application. They'll look at what's being requested. You know, they'll see if there's any other resources that we can pull in, you know, whether it's from MACV or other nonprofit throughout the state. And they'll issue, either they'll approve the program if they can right on the spot, or they'll send out a letter to develop it a little more and get some more information so we can clarify eligibility and other factors.
Andy, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts about the State Soldiers Assistance Program?
The only thing I'd like to say is, you know, I want everyone to go out and talk to their county veteran service officer. Not a lot of people know that the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has specific programs for their veterans. Everyone, when they think of veterans programs and veterans assistance, they think of the federal programs that are out there, and they don't know about these smaller state programs that can really help them in their time of need. And that's what we're here for.
And our county veteran service officers go through a lot of training to find out all the resources that are better available, whether they're federal programs, state programs, local programs. They really make it their business to understand what's available to help the veterans, don't they?
They sure do.
Andy, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
This is Andy Jarvis, the Benefits Division Supervisor from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, talking about Minnesota's State Soldiers Assistance Program. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel John Jensen, Phil Hansen, Andrew Jarvis, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.